Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, April 12th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, and it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it also contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we'd appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll then be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. We greatly appreciate whenever anybody does that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service. And that's just a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. So, whether it's a question about anything that we have discussed related to the tools that Michael and Jeannie offer, and we've been discussing them for over 13 years now, or it has something to do with any of the readings we've offered, whether it's Course in Miracles or Way of Mastery or Diedrich Wolzak's book for Choose Again, or Anthony DeMello's book, Awareness, or Christian Sundberg's book, A Walk in the Physical. We are open for comments and questions, actively inviting them, even if it seems like I'm in the middle of reading something or doing a monologue. Please feel free to call that number. 563-999-3581, and press 1 on your phone. these shows, a number of them have been curated out from the list of thousands that have been done in the past 13 years, and they've been highlighted as best of shows or highlight shows. And by far the most, with one or two few exceptions, very, very few exceptions, those highlight shows are the result of people just like you calling and asking a question or giving a comment or even providing some idea of a refutation. And some of our best work is done in response to comments and questions, in response to helping people frame out worksheets or frame out what Michael calls the mind shifter tool that's known to people like me in the therapy field as targeted journaling. And we're ready, willing, and somewhat capable of discussing any topic like that, so please feel free to share your thoughts with us. And and we welcome that. It's a Friday morning, so we had a support group last night, and somebody started off at the beginning of the group asking for support in doing a worksheet. And we did that. We worked through the worksheet process, and he moved from a level somewhere between 8 and 10 upset down to a level 6 and got some powerful insights about future worksheets he could do. And it's always a pleasure for me to be able to assist somebody through the worksheet process and to work with people who are willing. And that's the big key. It's what Michael Rice calls it, the cosmic grease, is willingness. If I am not willing, and Way of Mastery says the same thing, even Yeshua himself didn't force anything on anyone, didn't heal anyone, didn't enlighten them or move them even an inch. So if you're willing, if you have some disruption in your life and you'd like to have it be better and you're willing to take more and more responsibility for it, these tools will assist you in accepting the responsibility, learning to be able to respond differently the next time, unpacking some of those energies that might be considered traumatic or intensely negative in their emotional content, and freeing you up to engage life much more directly, much more cleanly and clearly, to see, in quotes, to see, to perceive more accurately, something closer to the actuality of life. And one of the things that we understand in work like this, and it's not just Michael Rice's work, but lots of deep spiritual traditions understand that what you perceive is not the same as what's actually available and what's in front of you. You know, ancient scriptures talk about it in different ways. Don't be deceived by appearances. And why would you judge your brother for having a speck in his or her eye when there's a plank in your own? All of these great spiritual traditions understand that what we think is going on is only a tiny fraction of what's actually happening in any given moment. And if we're only seeing a tiny fraction of what's going on in any given moment, how can we ever know when what we're doing, when what we're seeing, when what we're perceiving is useful, is accurate? And fortunately, there's a built-in mechanism. It's your emotional energy system that's there to provide feedback for you. And your pain sensors, they're there to provide feedback for you. If you weren't able to perceive pain, if you weren't able to be aware of and respond to stress, you wouldn't survive very long. I remember when I was a child, we had one of those programs was called an after school something. It was a series of stories about life and about people, often kids, that were geared towards young people, trying to help them be entertained, but also think about important issues in life. And one of those stories was about a young boy who was born and he was unable to feel pain. And it was a real problem because the ability to feel pain is an important part of being able to move away from those things that are destructive. And he would, you know, grab a hot object and not be aware of the pain, and it would damage his hand. And they became aware of this when he was an infant, and they had to work excessively to try and keep him alive because his regular feedback system didn't work. Well, in this work, we know that our feedback system to let us know that something is wrong with what we're doing is our emotional energy system. And if we are in any kind of anger, fear, sadness, hurt, emotional hurt, sense of betrayal and the anger that comes with that or the hurt that comes with that, we can instantly know in that moment that what our mind wants to tell us to do in that moment is not accurate. I understand that this goes directly against what the conscious, logical mind in the Western world would teach us. And yet, I have seen the tremendous benefit in my life from recognizing the truth of this teaching and applying it in my own life and using it to step more and more into 100% responsibility for the experience I'm creating moment to moment, whether it's joyful or sad, or angry, or frustrating, or confused. I had somebody in my office earlier this week, and we touched on something that we haven't talked about for quite a while in the support groups or in the Mind Shifters radio show, but it's the idea that when I first got introduced to this work, my understanding was the same as most people's understanding. We were taught in this culture that if you're feeling something that you don't like, that means someone or something outside of you is wrong or doing something bad or hurtful, and that's causing your upset. And that extended to pretty much every emotion I had. If I had an emotion of overwhelm, if I had the emotion of confusion, if I had the emotion of rage, it applied equally to all these situations. And when I got introduced to this work, it was a few years before I ran into Michael Rice's work, and I was introduced to a good number of years when I was introduced to Krishnamurti work, and it's really inviting us to take 100% responsibility for whatever experience we're creating and what we're doing with our thoughts. And I started to question, oh, wait a minute, this can't apply to confusion or overwhelm. Clearly, I'm only feeling overwhelmed because there's all of these things going on and they're too much for me to handle. And patient teachers I had, including Dr. Rice, would just gently encourage me to just play with the idea. What if overwhelm is an emotional state I'm creating by what I'm doing with my thoughts? What if confusion was an emotional state I was creating by what I was doing with my thoughts? And what if it's not being caused by the outside events? So eventually, after my resistance softened, I was willing to put the word overwhelm in a worksheet process in the place of an emotion. And I was willing to put confusion on a worksheet process in the spot where there's, you know, it asks me to list my emotion. And time and again, I realized that I was feeling tremendous sense of overwhelm and shutdown and panic. And I would do a worksheet or two or five, and nothing on the outside had changed. And all of a sudden, my overwhelm was dissipated, either completely or dramatically. And then the same thing started to happen with the emotion confusion. If I used the word confusion for my emotional state, and I used the thought that I'm using to create the emotion as, I just can't figure this out, or I just want to figure this out, time and again, that emotional state, the tension, the frustration, the sense of overwhelm would just dissipate through the use of the worksheets. And I was left with the inescapable conclusion that since nothing on the outside had changed in my life circumstances or what anybody else was doing or in the stressors that I was counting in my life, but the worksheet process has resulted in me feeling less of the emotion of confusion and less of the emotion of overwhelm, that must have been an inside job. And so I didn't have, if I was going to remain reasonable and living from the direct observation, I was forced to start to question these conclusions I was holding, that my confusion was being produced by this impossible situation, or that my overwhelm was being produced by all of these demands on me. And I just kept working at it. I just kept, whenever confusion would come up, I would put it on worksheets. After a while, and this was a number of years, probably somewhere in the five to 10 year mark of doing worksheets and EFT tapping and mind shift or targeted journaling and having people do the neuroemotional energy technique on me, eventually I came to the realization that whenever I'm experiencing the emotion of confusion, and I'm still willing to look at this, it may not be every time, but the vast majority of times when I generated the emotion of confusion, when I did enough worksheets, I realized, wait a minute, this isn't really that I don't know what to do. This is a situation where I'm getting a strong emotional hit or an intuitive guidance to do something that I don't want to do, that would require me to make a move I don't want to make, do a lot of extra work, end a relationship that was rather convenient, get out of a business deal because it was unethical, but it would, you know, cost me money, and I would lose money in the process. Something like that was what I found every time I would do the worksheets on confusion. And so now I go into most situations whenever I generate confusion, and I go in with the observation that in the past, this has been related to me hiding from myself, running away from a deep intuitive knowing. And I start exploring that. And I can tell you without reservation that every time I've done that, I found, yep, that was the truth. The truth of it is, I know what my gut tells me, what my intuition tells me is the right thing to do here, and I really don't want to do that because it would cost me money, or it would be inconvenient, or I'm going to end the relationship because in the long run it's not the right thing to do, but, you know, the sex was really good, or the fact that, you know, this person would pay for my meals when we go out or whatever. Or maybe it means I have to move out of the place I'm living in and go find my own place, and that's going to be expensive. But it was always the case. It has been the case so far that every time I generated confusion, it was really just a way for me to hide from myself, hide and run away from facing or acting on my highest guidance, my gut instinct, my intuition, my inspiration, whatever you want to call it. So that came up in a conversation with somebody in the past week, and I thought I should mention it again. It is it was a shocking dynamic for me to have that realization, and yet it's been holding true for years now, probably pushing 10 years of doing this work with that realization and that observation as the forefront. And while it's not fun, it is fruitful, right? It is beneficial. Because the sooner I act on the guidance I have, the less disruption I experience in my life. When I try to avoid, deny, suppress, run away from the instincts, the intuition, the guidance, the gut feelings that I have, it doesn't go well. And whenever I act on them, you know, from once I get calm, and so especially if I'm feeling this calm, centered experience, then it's probably a good sign that what's happening in that moment is that I'm getting an intuitive hit. And when I follow those intuitive hits, I can honestly say I've never been unhappy with the results I got when I stayed true to following my own intuition. And I can also say that I tend to suffer when I listen to the doubt, when I listen to the confusion, when I sink into the belief that this is too hard or too overwhelming, and I feel I generate the energy of and the emotion of overwhelm. That's never productive. That's never beneficial in my experience. So the sooner I can move out of that and either do worksheets on it or just turn right around and face and take action on whatever the insight or intuition or gut feeling is, I benefit far more quickly whenever that happens. So just thought I'd mention that and offer that for comments or questions, because it's been a huge boon to my own personal work. One of the other things we talk about is, you know, if I have a thought that, oh, boy, I'm so glad I'm done with that issue. If that thought comes into my mind, the most important thing I can do as soon as I can make time for it is start doing worksheets on the very issue that my mind just wanted me to believe I'm done with. Because the wisdom from this work says, I'm never going to be done with an issue. And if the thought, oh boy, I'm so glad you're done with this, I'm so glad you've mastered this, it's probably a part of my mind resonating that very issue and trying to avoid it in the next breath, in the next moment. So I've learned, if I start to, you know, have an experience with somebody, or I'm watching somebody else and they're struggling with, you know, procrastination, or they're struggling with a rage attack or whatever, and I have the thought in my head, boy, I'm so glad I'm not, you know, that I'm done with that issue. I'm so glad I've done all my work on that. If I have that thought, these days I use that as a signal that that's the best work for me to do next. To pull out a worksheet or start doing EFT tapping or do some targeted journaling that Michael calls the mind shifter tool on that very issue that my mind was just trying to trick me into believing I'm done with. Because the fact of the matter is, there's always the potential for me to generate upset, for me to be, you might say, blinded by my perception. And whenever I have the thought, I'm done, that the best use of that thought in my mind is to flip it around and say, oh, this is the exact area where you'll benefit the most from doing work right now. So a couple different realizations that helped me take my work to the next level. One is that whenever I generate the emotion of confusion, it's a pretty good bet that in that moment I'm trying to hide from myself some deep realization, some intuition, or what many would call a higher guidance. And the worksheets on that energy of overwhelm or the energy of confusion are a really powerful tool to help me move toward willingness to act from that guidance and intuition, even if it's going to provide me with the hardest set of choices and the most work moving forward. And the next thing is, if I hear my mind tell me, oh boy, so glad you're done with that issue, it's a trap. And the only way out of that trap is to go right into it and through it and start working on worksheets or journaling about what is this part of my mind that wants me to think I'm done with this? Where is it that I'm really churning with that very issue that I'm trying to hide from my awareness? So we've got at least a half an hour left, 563-999-3581. Does this make sense? Have you had any similar experiences? Have you learned yet that every time you have an emotion like overwhelm or confusion, that it's self-created and it's not the literal byproduct of an external set of circumstances? The last thing I'll mention is that I had somebody in my office yesterday talking about someone they care very deeply about who's got horrible life, intense life situations facing them, and they have decided they don't want any contact with the person I'm seeing. And so I directed them to the Pierre Pradervan Gentle Art of Blessing and the interview I did with him years ago. 610, Susan, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Tim. A lot of things coming together here. That book, The Laughing Jesus, it's pretty rough going insofar as those two authors pretty much obliterate any hope of having had a live Moses or Solomon or Jesus or David on the planet. I'm, as I said before, I'm not a historian, but I'm thinking about how you've kept nudging us away from depending on a guru or a teacher as the expert. And in a way, when Jesus, if he lived on the planet, when he was resurrected, if he was resurrected, he leaves and leaves the Holy Spirit with people, because he doesn't want them to be dependent on him like a cult leader. And so there's that. But then I'm thinking, wow, this is another level of removal. Not only did Jesus not exist, but we still have somehow, we have something that he supposedly taught, which is the best possible thing. How did we get that? And these authors talk about how Christianity formed here and there, and I'm thinking, well, Christianity? That meant there was a Christ figure, and he does knock that because he says Christ is just another word for Messiah or something, and it was taken from mythology, and I've got it all screwed up in my mind. The essence of it is still here. But I'm thinking, what? I wouldn't even want to have this discussion with my daughter, who's an Episcopal priest. What do you do when it's all taken away? The essence of it is still there. We didn't, in a way, need a physical Jesus on the planet, but he was the delivery system, or so we think. Now, these two authors are saying that these are myths, and that the Jesus, you know, Immaculate Conception and the birth and the living in a cave and the resurrection, all the way to the resurrection, is paralleled in, I think he said, the Egyptian myth of Osiris. And he pointed out different parts of Osiris's mythological life that, and he says, Jesus' story was taken directly from this. I don't even know if I'm asking you a question or just saying, this is the most mind-blowing thing. And in a way, having the concept of Aramaic forgiveness, seeing someone as innocent, is about the most amazing, it's the flagstone I'm standing on. It's like everything else has been taken away, and that is here, and that is it anyway. So why do I need anything else, or anybody else need anything else? Sorry, I'm fooling with my hearing aids, and I'm afraid I'm going to accidentally hang up on you again. That's one of them. Okay. Can you still hear me? Are you there?
I can hear you. Well, you know, the idea that makes the most sense to me from all these different things that I've read is that whether Jesus was a person, Yeshua was a person or not, and whether or not he went through all of the things exactly as they did, he was a, if he existed, he was a spiritual teacher. If he didn't exist, the stories about him were the compilations of some of the best and most deepest teachings that had been around for hundreds, if not thousands, of years before him. And what is given in the Way of Mastery and in the Jesus My Autobiography and the Course in Love, all of these different books say that Jesus as a person, Yeshua as a person, was given these teachings. These teachings have been around for thousands of years before him.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to ask, where did they come from, my question is, why do you care where it comes from or who where it started? Because if it works, that's all that really matters.
Well, yeah.
If
exactly.
It's the core of this work. It's why we keep saying it's all about the teaching and not the teacher. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There are people who, you know, if you interviewed my siblings and my parents, you would not get a picture of me as a great spiritual teacher, just a guy. And, you know, awkward in the early years in life and big and awkward and heavy into high school and not knowing what I wanted to do in college and stumbling around. It's a person. And the same thing for every human being. And
no,
there are
nice
people
thought.
Who are held up as phenomenal, holy people, but the highest of them say, why do you call me good, or why do you call me holy? Right? These teachings are that no one is different than anyone else, except for the degree to which they understand how we are all the same. Except for the degree to which they understand that they, each individual, is creating his or her perception of life. And so if it's a perception I'm creating that's leaving me feeling tense or scared or angry or hurt or frustrated, it's my perception that's off the mark. Guy Finley talks about how these teachings have been on the planet as long as there have been humans. David Gruder talks about them with the phrase perennial wisdom. Right? These are the things that cut across. Joseph Campbell used to talk about it. They cut across every culture and every century that's where we have any knowledge of what humans have been doing. These teachings, these ideas of awareness. Go ahead.
That's one of the beauties of this book, is I think it's the most impressive part to me so far is the very beginning when he points out how every religion has the wisdom understood and delivered, and then the parts of it which have failed terribly to do that and caused all kinds of havoc, murders and so forth, judgment, shutting out, exclusivity. But I was wondering about you personally. When did you first read that book, and did that dismantle whatever faith you had in an individual Jesus figure, or how did you take it when you first read it? I feel as if I couldn't have read this book until now. The delivery of this book into my life is perfect timing, because it doesn't even bother me that much.
That's a critical piece, right? And I've talked about this before with the autobiography of a yogi. And people mm-hmm. were telling me, oh, you've got to read this book in college. And I ran away from it
right.
like it was a red-hot coal in my hands.
Oh, I love that.
Because
yeah,
I was in a Catholic college at the time, and I hadn't, you know, even begun to seriously question the tenets and teachings
mm-hmm.
until in my senior year, after this college itself had required me to take these different classes on philosophy and religion and read, you know, Siddhartha and all these other books. And then all of a sudden I'm sitting in my senior religion class, and one of my fellow students questioned the Catholic priest who was teaching the class, and she said, now, wait a minute, excuse me, Father, you don't seriously mean to tell us that you think that everybody who hasn't been baptized as a Catholic is going to hell? All the Hindus, all the Buddhists, all... And
mm-hmm,
this,
right.
this gentleman, probably in his 60s, it looked like he was going to make his own head pop off, screaming, the veins in his neck, he turned red. I thought he was going to have a heart attack right there.
Wow.
I felt like... If he could have, he would have made fire and brimstone rain down on this student.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning of my seeing how insane that whole process is. And how rigid the beliefs were, and how dramatically they contradicted the evidence that my own college had been requiring me to read about.
Yeah.
So then from there, that was my senior year in college, from there I had the blessing of having some of the world's best friends, and some of them would, you know, want me to, here, read this book, here, read this, and let's discuss this, and tell me what you think about this. And a lot of those books had to do with spirituality and practicality and psychology and mm-hmm. philosophy, et cetera.
Wonderful.
And
cool.
And even with that, it was, you know, it took many years before I stumbled across the Michael Singer books and found them so useful. And he kept referring to the autobiography of a yogi as one of the primary books in his
yeah.
life. And then I went back to read that, and I just loved it. And I got about half or two-thirds
mm-hmm.
of the way through it, and all of a sudden I felt sick to my stomach, and I had to put it down. Because, you know, I had to just breathe and tap and do some journaling about what's going on here, how am I creating this reaction. And then after I did, I was able to pick it up and keep reading and thoroughly enjoy the rest of the book. So by the time I got to those books by Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy, I was already in full recognition of the fact
All right.
that what I'd been fed from my church education was really rigid and really narrow.
Right. You know what's amazing to me? Go ahead.
What's amazing to you?
The fact that the myths are the carriers of the essence of the truth, and the children who hear them feel them. They don't understand them in any intellectual way, but I was a little kid who loved Advent, loved Christmas, loved the stories. The excitement went way beyond the fact that we got presents on Christmas Day, There was something in the bones about something deeply exciting about those things. Same with the Easter stories. And though the kids are carrying the essence of the myth around, then they, at some point, they do or don't plug into the religion itself, learn the laws and the creeds and hear the dogmas, and maybe they leave the whole thing, losing the magic of the myth and the truth that was in the myth. It's amazing to me that the myths, they find a way of surviving because they are pure life, and they're not going to die somehow. And we keep putting them down through the generations, but we're screwing them up all the time too. Anyway, you were going to say something, and I interrupted you, so keep going.
Well, I was going to say that I also had the distinct privilege. I'll have to use that word now. It didn't feel like it at the time because I was raised in this Catholic family, right? And so everybody had godparents. And I didn't realize it at the time, but godparents were just human beings. But they were given a special place in this family history. And so, you know, my parents chose whoever was going to be a godparent very seriously, and they were there at the baptism, and they took the oath that if anything happened to the parents, they would raise the child in the Catholic faith, and they would be there to support their spiritual growth or whatever, all of this stuff. Well, as a kid, I thought that's very serious because my parents took it very seriously, and each of my siblings had their, you know, godmother and godfather, and my godfather, I never really heard from, or I didn't get gifts from. My siblings would get gifts on their birthdays from their godparents, et cetera. I didn't. My godfather turned out to be one of the more highly intelligent, multilingual research Catholic priests who actually worked with the Dead Sea Scrolls because he was so fluent in a variety of languages and because he was into archaeology and because he was a Catholic priest. And as luck would have it, as life would have it, his name was Tom Schaub, Father Tom Schaub. And he literally was on the ground with the Dead Sea Scrolls, where they found them, you know, close to that area, studying the culture, studying the land, studying the texts, etc. And so as I got out of college and I started hearing all of these stories about him, now it started to make sense to me why, you know, he didn't attend birthday parties or send gifts or whatever. And then came the stories that he'd fallen in love with a nun and they'd both left their respective vows and gotten married. But also, because they were so bright and so dedicated, Father Tom did anyway, wrote a very well thought out, very well worded explanation to the family. And he knew the family would be very upset, and certain members of the family would be furiously angry and hurt and whatever. So I had that in my history as well, the idea that soon after college I'm getting the stories about how it doesn't make you a bad person if you question your faith or if you question the way you're living your life. And so that was another layer that helped me step into my own exploration.
Did you ever get in touch with him personally, you and him?
No.
To talk?
No.
Oh.
My mother was, well, no, it's just what it was. My mother was close to him. My mother would get notes and letters, and she would share them with me. But I was I was just able to step back from that and use the awareness that, you know, everybody that I knew who was a really good person that also knew Father Tom Schaub said, this guy is brilliant and he's loving and he's a wonderful person and he's done great work in the world. Oh, and by the way, he's left the priesthood. Mm. So it just kind of helped me expand what I thought was possible. Mm-hmm. Because prior to that, all the way through college, I'd been given the idea that, you know, if you took the oath to be a priest and you broke it in any way, you're going to hell, kind of thing. Fire and brimstone is coming down on your head.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of things that I can see from hindsight helped put me in a place where I was more tolerant by the time I was considering those books by Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy and many others. You know, Elaine Pagels and others have written books about what's the real history here, what's the value of looking at the original languages and the idioms and just distilling from all of that what might be good advice for how I live my life. How can I live my life in a more productive, loving, respectful way? Whether anybody in any religion is going to say it's right or wrong is irrelevant to me. If it's making my life more safe and sane and lovable, livable, respectful, that's what I'm investing.
It all comes down to this. I remember reading an essay when I was 14 by Emerson on self-reliance, and that keeps popping up. Because you're talking about self-reliance, profound self-reliance, which sounds as if we're all separate. But that's not what it's talking about at all. And the stepping stones, your stepping stones of finding your way to being self-reliant, independent, and yet you can teach about mystical things or, you know, like we're not separate at all. I have no way of understanding in my gut what that means. But it must be true, because the best of the best keep pointing in that direction. So, Tim Bingham left the church when he was 13. Because the priest told him his mother, being Jewish, would go to hell if she didn't convert. He decided he'd go to hell along with her, I guess. And we found our way back to working with the principles that you and Michael Rice teach or various things. Anyway, what were you saying?
Well, think about it, that you and I were talking about this 6 or 7 years ago. I was listening to a physicist being interviewed by Krista Tippett.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, you know, one of the hallmarks of any deep, one of the characteristics that helps you decide if something is a deep truth is that its opposite is also true. So at one level of scale, we're all the same and there is no separation. At another level of scale, we can build a life experience based on the fact that we're separate and we have our individuality and we can make our own choices and we can choose who we live with and who we move away from, and we can choose what we eat, and we can choose whether or not we want to believe in a religion. And at another level of scale, which is something that the conscious logical mind has a tremendously difficult time with, but at another level of scale, there is no separation. Everything we do is energetic in its own way and is connected to all other energy and sends out ripples. And this is why, you know, Jung talks about synchronicity, which is just a word to try and explain how everything's connected. So how can they both be true? Well, to the simple conscious logical mind, they can't. And yet, these teachings, our science itself says there's a lot more going on here than our conscious logical mind can track. So don't get too hung up on the details. Like, don't sweat the little things. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, they're all little things.
Mm. Well, can I change the subject?
Yes.
Not that that one's exhausted. Tim Bingham has been doing the DNRS, the neuroplasticity exercises. He actually signed up for the whole course, and he's about a month in, and he stands around on little pieces of paper in his underwear at 4 a.m. and spends an hour rewiring his brain, and it's really quite intriguing. So I just signed up for it, to my peril. I mean, I don't even feel as if I have the time, but I'm listening to all the videos, and they make total sense. But it's another way to stop doing all the repetitive, anxiety-producing, whatever, you know, thought loops and way of rewiring brain to so that more joy can come in and more presence can come in. And I feel a little bit as if I'm digging another well, and I've already dug a really deep one with you and Michael Rice, and I'm just trusting that the tubes down into the soil are going to meet very soon under there. But I'll keep you posted if you're interested. I know you know about this, but you've never done that course, right?
I began listening to the course. I paid for it, and I began listening to the course, and I will make the time for it as things open up with my Journey's Dream commitments and my Mind Shifter Radio and my private practice and my 2 support groups and, my friends and family.
Either. Right.
I will eventually make time for it.
Well, it is a big commitment. The woman Tim is working with, Mira Rubin, who works, she has her own kind of work coaching she does with her clients called Core Essentials or something like that. I might even be wrong about what she calls it. She signed up for it, and Tim and she they made a deal that they would send a thumbs up every day as each of them had done their hour. And Tim was sending her a very early thumbs up, and he was missing her thumbs up, and he said, "Where are your thumbs ups?" And she said, "I just can't do it right now." So she may do it later on too, but there's a lot of interest in this and hopefulness that we can rewire our brains in ways. The wake-up sheet does that. We do enough wake-up sheets, we're rewiring our brains. And I do feel as if I've rewired my brain a lot. But this is just another way. I'm glad you're interested in it and hope to do it sometime. You might have to do it sometime when you're retired, if you ever retire, because it's doing an hour a day and listening to it, gazillion little videos. Holy mackerel. Anyway, that's just a report.
Yeah, and what she talks about is that you don't have to do it forever. But you do it for 6 months or so, and you make a substantial change in the way your brain is processing things, and to good advantage, right? It makes a difference in how your brain functions.
Right.
And we have people in our support group who've been at it for years, and somebody was just talking on Tuesday about not the DNRS program, but they've been at support groups, EFT tapping, Mind Shifters, Dr. Michael Rice's Reality Management Worksheet. They've been at this kind of work for years. And one of them was talking about how frustrating it is to not be done, and how she still gets frustrated that this and that isn't what she wants it to be in her life, etc. And she wanted a power tool. Someone had mentioned something, and I said, "This is kind of like a power tool for this." And she says, "I want a power tool." And I said, "Well, The gratitude practice itself is a power tool.
Mm.
Right? If you can just slow down and do an accurate assessment, what was your life like before you started doing these tools?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you have this upset in your life now because X, Y, or Z just happened. So think back. If this kind of thing had happened, and you know it did, it happened 6 or 8 years ago before you found this work, how long would you have been upset?
Yeah.
And compare that to how long you were upset this most recent time, how quickly you bounced mm-hmm. back, how deeply upset you get. And she started doing that, and she said, well, there's no doubt about it. It's night and day difference. So even though in the moment she's frustrated because she's having some kind of an upset, and she doesn't like the upset she's feeling, and she wants it to be done, if she stops and does an accurate assessment, she's forced to recognize, oh, I've made tremendous progress. And that's why Michael Rice has on his worksheet the idea of having a rate your upset level at the beginning and the end, because your conscious logical mind is going to try and trick you into thinking this isn't working, when in truth, over time, it does work. And if you start doing those assessments every once in a while, then it's harder to have it hide from you, the benefit of the work.
This is good, because what you're saying is, you're saying a lot of things, but one thing that you're saying to me that I'm getting from you is that this is a power tool, but it's a tool. Whereas I think I've already set this up like, this is going to really finish the job. This is going to do it. Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, there's that part of you that just wants to be done, right? And that was part of the monologue today, is that anytime I have that thought, oh, gee, I'm so glad I'm done with that issue, I know from my own work that what that is best used by me as an alarm to tell me, oh, here's your next piece of work. Here's what you're trying to hide from yourself.
Yeah.
And this is not a journey to a destination, and you arrive and you're done. This is just life. It's this constant flow.
Right.
And the sooner we can adjust our expectations to that actuality, the more efficient our work will become. And the less we put up those roadblocks of additional tension and upset and frustration that say, gee, I'm frustrated that I'm not done yet.
Yeah. One of the things that I wonder about is Jill Bolte Taylor, that woman who had a stroke, the neuro brain scientist.
Yes.
She had a stroke and studied herself. And one of the videos in this program is a video I had watched years ago. And she was able to access only part of her brain. And it was the part that saw everything as just amazing and beautiful. Even though she couldn't lift her arm or feed herself, she didn't care. The other part of her brain is totally engaged, and the other one's offline for a while. So there's that whole thing of how we're busy accessing those seemingly inaccessible parts of our brains and waking them up. But this isn't like taking a blast of LSD. This is like a humble daily exercise, modest.
This is actually working with the brain to strengthen it. Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that's the end of our time.
Thank
you again for your comment and question. And Magda, hold on. Jeannie might be able to turn on your microphone if that's relevant. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. Everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Friday, April the 12th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And Michael's with us, and we already have two hands up. And they may be left over from Dr. Tim, but we do have two hands up, Michael.
Awesome. Let's go for it. Welcome, everybody. Thank you, dear heart. And let's see what folks have to say.
Okay. The first one is area code 828. You are on the air. Hi.
Hi. It's Maka. How are you?
Oh, well, welcome, young lady. We're rocking. How about you?
I'm making banana bread, so I'm rocking too.
Ooh.
Or mixing.
Do worksheets on jealousy.
Oh,
we're not going to get to taste any.
I wanted to ask Dr. Tim and Susan to explain what they were talking about in terms of some kind of class or course. It sounded kind of interesting, but I obviously missed the original time when it was brought up on the show. So anyway, I can do that.
Susan is still with us. She might be able to answer you. Susan, you're on.
Cool. Lovely.
Hi, Magda. If you go to your search engine and type in DNRS, neural restructuring, something or other, I can't remember what it means, but it's a whole course that you pay for. It's not exorbitant. I mean, it's 6 months of instruction, which you can drag out for a year of instruction, lots of videos. It's how to rewire your brain wiring, limbic system. I'm just learning about it. I just started. Tim Bingham got all the way into it and is using it with good results already. And I thought, well, you know, I'm married to the guy. I might as well find out what he's doing. So
awesome.
I've signed up for it. And it's a huge commitment of time. But then again, Tim and I don't have jobs. Like, you know, we're busy, but we have time. It's a great luxury to have this time. DNRS.
Okay, D as in dog.
Yeah, yep. It stands for Dynamic Neural Retraining System.
Cool. Thank you, Jeannie. Yeah. It starts you off explaining what the limbic system is and how you can have it compromised for many reasons, like an illness or trauma or environmental challenges like mold in your house. I mean, you can compromise and upset your limbic system from any angle and get it to the point where even if you have a tiny little suggestion of like mold, you overreact. And that's like trauma reactions. I mean, Michael's been teaching this stuff and we've been undoing and changing neural pathways using the wake-up sheets and using the mind shifter tool and all that stuff. So we've been doing it, but this is just a different language. And it's going into my brain in a different way. So I'm very excited about it.
Okay,
but I'm not
great.
Going to abandon the deep well that's been dug here with this work. Let me tell you.
I hear you. Don't give up one great thing for the possibility of something else being good.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when Michael's mother had a stroke, and she was paralyzed on one side. And Michael spent 2 weeks, like, he would push her foot and he'd say, think about what, you know, that feels like. Let's get your brain rewired to move your foot, because the part of her brain that normally did it wasn't working.
Oh.
And she walked out of there on a walker.
Oh,
wow.
God, that's just the idea.
Wow.
One of the videos that they have us listen to is Jill Bolte-Taylor. The woman who had a stroke, and she's a brain scientist. So she said, oh, my God, how lucky am I? I'm having a stroke, and I'm a brain scientist. I get to study myself in my own brain, what a wonderful woman. But one
That's
of the videos
story.
They show is about how she came to understand what was happening to her, and it took her 8 years to find her way back to mobility and being able to speak, and she gives this TED Talk. You would love it. Jill Bolte, B-O-L-T-E, Taylor. That'll blow your mind, Magda, if you haven't heard that one. She's totally charming. Here she went through this trauma, and there's not an ounce of self-pity or blame in it. She just is so excited about the whole thing.
Chuck and I came across that information and her story many years ago, actually. It's just remarkable. So it gives us hope, lots of hope. Okay, well, great. Thank you, Susan. And Michael and Jeannie, I will just get back to making my bread, and I'll be listening, okay?
All right, enjoy. Blessings.
Blessings to all of you. Bye-bye.
All right. And Miss Susan, how do you be?
Being okay, the saga goes on, but the work is helping very much. So I feel as if I'm okay. I'm just able to ride the waves a lot better than I would have otherwise. Thanks for asking. How are you guys doing?
Lots of garden time. It's a little chilly here today, but it looks like winter's officially over. In the 10-day forecast, we don't have one frosty night left, so we're hoping it stays
that
way.
Yep. So, oh, that's great.
But all is well, rock and roll.
That's great. And you too, Jeannie?
Doing very well. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, you have a blessed day. And Ms. Jeannie, you've got another hand up. Okay.
Yeah. And I believe it's Ms. Celinda, 541. You're on the air.
Yes.
Oh, welcome. You made it.
Yeah, of course I did. Even though the power went out this morning, as probably Jeannie told you.
Yes.
The whole valley was out. Yeah, pretty exciting.
So what's on your mind for today?
Well, it's a leftover from Susan talking with Dr. Tim, and they were talking about was Jesus real or not real in this book that she had just read, which I think she said was The Myth of Jesus, but I don't remember for sure what its title is. They were talking about myths, and the how Susan was mentioning, I thought it was a very bright insight, how the child takes the myth on a feeling level, not a knowing level, and that feeling level very often stays long after the knowing level may have decided, oh, this is a bunch of hooey. And I can attest to that because I never did lose that mythical understanding of Yeshua and who he was, what he came to do. Even when I took him off the cross, even when I walked away from the conventional churches, Yeshua walked right along with me, whoever Yeshua was, whether he was a perennial wisdom or whether he was actually a person, it didn't matter. So, and it brought me to realizing how we lock ourselves down when we get into survival, because survival is, oh, it's either this way or it's that way. Like, for me, it doesn't matter whether Jesus was a real person, excuse me, or whether he was a mythological figure representing a perennial truth. The fact is, I have a froggy in my throat, just a second. The fact is that the truth is still there, and that myth still guides me into deeper and deeper wisdom. And I don't have to make some sort of decision that says, oh, this is true, this isn't true, because I never will know. And that's not the point.
Until you use it. And then when you use it and you see that it works, then you'll know.
That's it. But that knowing comes from our life experience and for our awareness that this is truth for me. And so we just leave all of that debate behind about who's right and who's wrong, the same sort of debate that scientists get into when they come to believe that their theories are the ultimate final truth. And they're not. They're just theories waiting to be disproven or upheld.
Yep. Cool.
I just thought I'd share that because it is a great comfort to me to know I don't have to make an either-or decision. There is a whole rainbow of choices out there, and the proof is always in the field. The proof is always in the pudding.
Yep. Take the tools,
and thank you,
use them, and watch the results.
That's it.
Most profound way to approach it that I know of.
I love it when you and Dr. Tim and Jeannie says, don't believe a word I say. I'm starting to say that myself, and maybe I'll grow into the actual understanding and reality of don't believe a word I say. This is just my experience. Find out for yourself.
Well, joining you in living the experience and living the dream.
Yes,
instead
sir,
of the nightmares.
And I'm envious about your gardening. And we may be closer in zoning than I thought for the USDA growing zones because we are now beginning to warm up. And so that's pretty exciting. So
yes.
I'm with you and hope to get to the garden today.
I have a blessed one.
You as well. And you too, Susan.
All right. Miss Jeannie, do we have anything else happening in the chat room or anybody else in the phone queue with the hand up?
It's quiet
exciting?
In the chat room. Jamuna, do you want to do the call-in again today since we missed it yesterday? Okay. Let's see how
we'll
this works.
We'll do a test here.
Jamuna
is on Podbeam, and let's see how this works.
All right. All right, Jamuna, let's see if we can hear you.
Aloha.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you
low.
In the background, yes. Go for it.
No.
I heard you say, do you hear me, but that's the last I heard.
How's that?
Oh, much better. We're going to get feedback, but let's see how it goes.
Feedback?
Well, it's because I have a microphone and a speaker both going right now. So, let's see how it works.
Okay. Well, you know, so no gardening for me. But
No gardening in Hawaii?
No gardening, well, at least in Honolulu on Oahu, so because it's rainy. But
so how are you today? What's on your mind?
Did we lose you? I show you're still on, but I showed, oh, it was a little mute button came up. But try it again. Not hearing you.
It looks like this isn't going to work.
And she hung up on that, so maybe she'll try to call back in. Oh, here she's going to try it again. Let's see what happens. All right, let's try it again.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, good. Okay, I left and came back, and I'm so sorry, everybody, that I don't know. But, yeah, so I'm doing pretty well. I was doing, you know, good. And then the other day, the only way I know how to be is just very honest. So I'm just going to put this out there. Like, I'm not going to be rude or anything. I don't. But anyway, you know, I was at, we have like a Long's Drugs. It's part of CVS here in Hawaii. And I was, you know, shopping. And, you know, I was doing really my practice stuff. Of course, something occurred that brings up some trauma in me, which I recognize it was trauma. And I was just, I've been going there for years. And, you know, I'm shopping, and the security guard is, like, following me, yeah? And not making it, like, inconspicuous. He's making it, or she is making it, like, she's following me. And finally, I just, like, stopped. I realized, like, everywhere I moved, she was with me. I said, are you following me? And so, anyway, to make a long story short, she is. And I'm like, why? Like, so anyway, I went to the manager and I like said, hey, you know, this girl says she's following me. I don't know why. I've been coming here for years and it ain't right. So anyway, a little thing like there was dialogue back and forth. Senator's like, I said, hey, sis, I could tell she was local. And she, I was like, no, you're not doing your job. You're being annoying. You told you to follow me. And she wouldn't say. So anyway, It just brought up a lot of stuff in me. Like, why? Like, you know.
What a nice,
you know, there's
gift.
Other people. Go ahead. Huh?
I say, what a nice gift if it brought all that stuff up for you. I mean, how many different worksheets do you have the opportunity to do about maybe being trusted and people being honest? It sounds like there'd be some, you know, good grist for the mill there.
Yes, I because. You know, like, because people can't see me, my body, but I'm like, I'm mixed race, yeah? But I'm thinking, this is Hawaii, and it's a local girl. Why is she following me around? And I said, is this a profiling? And she said, no. But, and I don't think it was. I think that she's just not trained good. And it's like, if you're going to jump off a bridge, someone tells you to jump off a bridge, you're going to jump off a bridge too. You know? That's what I'm thinking back in my head. But anyway, it just brought up a lot of trauma in me. About, like, the past, about, you know, people, you know, like, racism.
Being trusted because you're mixed race?
Yeah, like, you know, certain stuff. Like, I was wearing, like, a strap, like, people were, like, profiling me. So I brought all that up. And then, you know, and I'm like, man, this is an interesting situation that I created. But I was able to recognize that, you know, I have to look at it. If I really want to heal, because I'm doing a lot of, you know, inner work. So this is another part that my, you know, the Holy Spirit wants me to see, which is beautiful. But I tell you, man, the ego was triggered. But I
yep, yeah. I hear you.
At least I didn't react as bad as I used to in the past, in the younger form of me. I know you say I'm a young lady, but I was younger at one point.
What would the energy that would exude from you in that situation have been in the past? Would there have been some form of hostility? Or
I was looking at it, and, oh, I wanted to tie this into the generational thing, too. I don't know. I thought maybe it was a little generational. That's another reason why I brought it up. But I think that, you know, what I was seeing was that I still had that, like, I think it was more like doubt. Like more like a doubt, which is hostility, like a doubt. And so I'm projecting it out there. And so it gets reflected as I'm being followed, like there's something wrong with me, which is a deep one. You know what I mean? So
often that's a core power person message, there's something wrong with you. That can be, you know, a direct family thing as well.
What'd you say?
I say that can be a direct family thing as well. That the thought comes up of, you know, there's something wrong with me. That's oftentimes a message that comes from a power person. And so, you know, maybe some worksheets around your power person might be beneficial there.
Yeah, I think so, because I have a feeling like, too, when I was kind of asking Holy Spirit about it, I felt that it was, like, you know, I know yesterday you were talking about generational dynamics. And
right.
I was like, yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, I definitely feel that. So I definitely need to do some worksheets on that. Yeah.
So, well, we'll hold the space for that to happen and open the space for the healing of the racist dynamic, of the generational dynamic. And, you know, one of the beauties of each person that chooses to do their work is they open the energy window for everybody. And to me today, that is so important because there's so much trauma going on for so many people that have no idea that what they're experiencing is inside of them, and that there's an opportunity to work through whatever it is. So thanks for being willing. It's awesome.
Yeah, I just maybe next week I can share some more insights that I got through the worksheet. That's what I just felt like sharing. I don't know. I hope it was helpful for somebody, okay. And maybe it was, maybe it was, but I, you know.
Makes a good point.
Yeah.
Makes a good point. So we'll hold the space and join you in healing. You know, when you look at the racist dynamic on the planet that's been so crazy, insane, and that once we're brainwashed with prejudices because nobody's born with them, it can be a tough thing to work through, both the abuser's side and the abused side of it. So holding space to literally for that whole dynamic on a global scale, because it's been so horrific around the world, that the suffering that anyone who's ever been a racist abuser is alleviated, and that anyone who has ever been abused by a racist, that their suffering is alleviated. You know, focusing in the presence of love in that direction and holding space for the work you're getting ready to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Have a blessed one. Any other thoughts?
No, that's about it. And
okay.
I look forward to this week sharing some of the things that I was shown and I'm healing through the worksheet.
Cool. Awesome. Extending love in your direction, young lady.
Thank you.
By the way, when I put forward that idea of young lady, young man, my knowledge is, and it's in part informed, you've probably heard me talk about it before, we brought it up recently on the show, of a medical conference I went to several decades ago where the speaker was from a place in Ohio called the DeCourcy Clinic in Cincinnati. And their conclusion after doing medical research said, time is not toxic. Time has no effect on human tissue under any conditions. It is a belief in the effect of time by those who subscribe to such a belief that acts as a poison. So for my own sake, in terms of the energy that I put out regarding this illusion of age and time, I affirm each person that I speak to as being in their youth. And so I seriously mean and hold the space of seeing you as that youth. And in doing so, part of my intention is to give that same gift to myself, because I was brainwashed by the culture just like pretty much everybody else. Like, well, we're supposed to get old and decrepit and die. And I feel in terms of my own process with the way that I've looked at that issue, literally I'm younger now, I'm healthier now, I have with all the early illness I went through as a kid, I mean, several times almost died. And I feel like shifting the mind energy is a really important thing to do. And so each time I put that salutation onto someone, I'm shifting it in and for myself, as well as acknowledging that shift for whoever I'm speaking to. So seeing you in your eternal youthfulness.
Thank you.
All right. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye. So our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. And then if you push 1, through the magic of technology, a little hand will go up in the control panel and Jeannie will know you want to speak to us. So, Machine, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet.
All right. Well, then we're on page 78 in the Enlightenment book, the translation work we've done from the Kabor's manuscript. So we've been going through the dictionary and looking at some of the key ideas from the Aramaic language. And actually, I think I may have switched a page there. So looking at the top of page 78, carob, which is a chocolate substitute. No, that's different carob. But in Aramaic, and, you know, in terms of developing the ability to have a mind that can conceive as the Aramaic-speaking mind conceived, this word neighbor speaks not only of those that are physically close, but those that are mentally near to us. So physical and mental closeness is principal element of the word. Also included is the operating self. So neighbor in the text designates not only others of whom one is aware or near, but also the operating self. So your own neighbor. When Yeshua speaks of, in order for you to live, you've got to die, he's addressing a true self, and then what in this context we're offering is the operating self, or the ego self, or the structure in the mind. And that is a neighbor to you. And the objective of that passage where we were told that we were supposed to love our neighbors was not about, it really wasn't about anything to do with the neighbor. It was about the obligation was to keep the presence of love in your mind, not loving your neighbor, but being the presence of love when you interact with anyone who was mentally or physically near to you, including the things that came up within your own operating self. The benefit of that being, if let's say some form of corrupt energy, corrupt data, hostility or fear moves within your mind, within that, what we're referring to here is the operating self. If love is present, if your human life is active and present, then that corrupt data is going to begin to be dissolved. It's going to begin to be transmuted and shifted so that the false parts of it, the false understandings, the false energetic impact of those patterns will begin to dissolve. Pretty powerful concept when you realize that this idea of loving your neighbor doesn't have anything to do with your neighbor, and it doesn't have anything to do with what we call loving, or what most really, when they say I love you, are really talking about a rather venial form of approval. You'll notice that people will, you know, be all over somebody and how much they love them until they, quote-unquote, love them, until that person does something they don't like. And then all of a sudden, what happens to love? Well, that wasn't love at all. Love is the essence of our human lives. And so that passage which said to, or the Greeks translated as, love your neighbor, it's really about maintain your human essence, which is the presence of love, whoever you get near, and by so doing, you will benefit. And then the next significant piece here is the word keen, spelled two ways, key, K-E-A-N or K-E-E-N, and this is the mind structure, the neural structure underlying the attitude described as just or fair behavior between man and his fellow man, so that justness and fairness comes a possibility. This comes from the Beatitudes. one of the places where Beatitude shines very brightly is that instruction that in order to have the deepest guidance that has been implanted in your mind to be active, then this principle of just and fair behavior has to be active. We head down and we hear the word kana, and that's mercy and compassion. Several examples of that.
You have another caller.
Oh, well, let's say hello. Great. Let's go for it.
Hey, this is another Podbean caller, so let's see if we can get Sandy online here.
Yay. Hello, Sandy. How are things in Poland? Glad to hear your voice. At least I hope I'm going to hear it.
I hope so, too.
Oh, there you go. We can hear you. Welcome.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
What's on your mind for today? How are you?
Your voice disappeared, and you're very quiet, very low. So I'm not sure if Jamuna can give you a pointer on how to get your volume up on that.
I could hear you those first few words, Sandy. So whatever you're doing, let's try it again. Can't hear you at all, Sandy, if you're speaking.
Jamuna, can you assist on how you got your volume up on yours? I can hear Jamuna faintly. She did write in the chat room, if you're on a speaker, it's low for some reason. If you turn off the speaker and go to the phone audio, then it worked for her.
And pardon us while we're learning this new technology that we're working with called Podbean. We'll be choosing at some point in the future as to whether or not we're going to stay with Blog Talk as we are now, or whether we might make the switch to Podbean.
So Sandy, Jamuna said turn your phone volume up and turn it off of speakerphone and just go to your regular phone audio.
So if you're on a cell phone, just putting the cell phone up to your ear instead of using the speaker might enhance your voice, but we can't hear a sound from you now, Sandy.
Maybe hang up and do it again.
Well, why don't you go ahead and experiment a little bit, Sandy, and I'm going to go ahead with our conversation from the manuscript. And if you are able to move things around so that you can communicate with us, go ahead and just shout it out, and we'll respond. I'll just put this on hold.
She hung up. I guess she's going to call back in and see
okay. If
it worked.
So I'm going to head to the bottom of the page on page 78 to the word kata, which is a noun, which is an archery term. It is the word that's been translated as sin, or in concert with the idea of sin from the Greek translations, but it's actually an archery term. And if you read it from the dictionary, it's an archery term denoting missing the mark, mistake, deviation from a true line, a misstep, wrongdoing. And so to get back on track is to recognize that you realign with truth and, you know, get back on target would be the idea there.
Try it again, Sandy. She's back on.
Okay. Cool. We're not hearing a sound, Sandy.
Jamuna said maybe you could ask your question in the chat.
and then I can ask it since we're not hearing you.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be working, unfortunately. So if you pop your question in the chat room or your comment, we can translate for you. And it's nice to hear from you all the way from Poland. Delighted that you're with us. Anything coming through in the chat, sweetie?
Not yet.
Okay. I'm going to just carry on then with this. I'm going to minimize the time we spend. I know we've got different technology we're trying to integrate, but... So if we head down on page 79, next key idea, Kishuka, and this speaks of an absence of light or darkness, ignorance, really mentally dark. And so if one does not realize that their being is the active presence of love, then they have trouble being who they are, as we were informed, that we're designed to be the light of the world, that we're designed to have this presence of love in our minds, and that's what keeps our minds and our perception on track. We talked quite a bit about the word rachma earlier, and rachma being the word that was used as opposed to being told to love our neighbors. The word in Aramaic was have rachma for neighbors, which is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that keeps the frontal lobes, which are where intentions are stored, on track with love. And it's the gateway, it's a dual function, it's the gateway through which love, human life, enters this human form. This is a corollary term, kuba. And kuba holds a similar function over the back of the brain where perception is stored. And so it's a mindset of love. It includes a desire or goal of all-embracing affection and a cue control which causes good, wholesome, and lovable, whatever is good, wholesome, and lovable about others to be perceived. Aramaic dictionaries subsequent to the 7th century tended to convert this concept to Renaissance love. And so in translating it, it starts to bring in that Greek connotation, which was not its original intent. It was literally a way, kuba is part of a mindset that allows perception and units of perceptual memory to be used in building our guidance system. It only allows those which are key to love to be used. So energetic patterns in the mind of irritation or threat are blocked by the activity of kuba, and the mind therefore can build perceptual constructs that are based in love. And when our perceptual constructs are based in love, even though they're still from carbon-based membrane, even though they're from the past, everything they feed us is going to be accurate. And so it's going to put us on track and make it a whole lot more likely that we get to literally extend ourselves out into the world and be perceived as we are. The filters that we extend ourselves out into the world to taint or touch what people perceive of us. And so if the filters that are set are those of love, they tend to reinforce people's ability to perceive you as love, and it tends to eliminate the irritation, the hostility, the threat that many minds live in, and soften that energy and bring it more into alignment with the active presence of love. And interestingly, the word rachma and the word kuba together, the frontal lobes, the back, in Aramaic would be what would be considered to be perfect love. And you remember they said, perfect love casts out fear. If Rachma and Kuba are set, the mind cannot generate a fear-based reality. Fear-based realities are very traumatic to both body and mind. You know, it's recognized in medicine today that fear-based perception leaves one in a state that's called sympathetic dominance. In sympathetic dominance, and most people are aware of that term with a different set of words, and it's fight-flight. And it's really fight-flight-fright, fear, and fawning. You know, the child that learns that if they make one step out of line, they're in deep trouble, ends up fawning. Oh, I have to do everything perfectly to keep this person in front of me happy so that I don't get blamed, so that I don't get beat up, so that I don't get abused. And so those are all states of physiology that result in the compromising of the higher functions of the human mind and literally drain away blood flow in order to supply survival needs, i.e. to fight or run. Literally, physiologically, blood is drained away from the higher centers of the brain, from rest, digestion, elimination, and any function that is not urgent to survival. Literally, blood flow is drained away to supply that blood flow, oxygen, nutrition to the large muscles so that we can run or fight. And so, to me, that just reinforces the whole reason why we would want to understand these Aramaic concepts of Rachma and Kuba, and that above all, you maintain that so that you have proper rest, proper digestion, proper regeneration, proper healing, rather than fight or flight. Most people live in that chronic sympathetic dominant state, which means that being chronic, going on for long periods of time, quite literally, the blood vessels that supply the higher functions over time become compromised. They become kind of like a swamp. And the longer one spends in sympathetic dominance, the more time it's going to take to come out of that sympathetic dominant state into a balance between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. And so the presence of, which in Aramaic was called perfect love, means that you are not going to go into sympathetic dominance. Yes, if a threat comes, you'll shift there, but it doesn't become an habitual state.
I have two questions.
So this word, oh, okay, cool.
So Sandy wrote her ex confuses her, and I said, remember that whatever comes forward is already in you. He brings up confusion that's already in you. And she said, well, he says he's happily married, and yet he keeps writing to her, like he even wrote her a happy Easter note text. And mm-hmm. she asked him, he stopped for a while after she asked him to introduce her to his wife. She said it's confusing for her. So what
kind of work can you do? Yeah, I'd offer that you might want to do some forgiveness work around this, the double messages that come, the confusing messages that come perhaps from, have come from your family system, and to recognize that, you know, he can't confuse you, but if there's confusion in your mind, his communication can certainly bring that up. And two directions I would suggest going with that. One is to be really clear with him that you are a woman of integrity and that there is no interest in any sort of, you know, shenanigans, if that's, you know, part of what's implied to you, at least in his communications, being really clear with that and being really clear with yourself of who you are and that you are going to stay in integrity with yourself. And then to recognize that his communications are, rather than causing you confusion, they're bringing up confusion, and that means your opportunity to learn to forgive the confusion that your mind presents. You know, if you look back over your life, how much of your life did you spend, have you spent in confusion? And so as you do the forgiveness work, you'll clear out the conflicting energies. And the way the mind works is through energetic patterns, or literally electrical frequencies. And a good metaphor for that can be the idea of light energy. I usually use an example. Let's imagine I've got a 4x8 whiteboard in front of me, and I take a red marker and I draw a circle, and I take a blue marker and I draw a circle, and I take a green marker and I draw a circle. And then I have a red, blue, and a green light. And in each case, I shine the light, the red light on the red circle, the blue on the blue, and the green on the green. And I have perfect clarity with each of those light sources and their reflections. Now, we know scientifically that there's no such thing as red, blue, and green. Red, blue, and green are interpretations of the mind. That's why some people are colorblind, because they see those frequencies, they interpret those frequencies differently than most. But imagine that where I have those three lights shone on three separate places on my whiteboard, and I've got clarity on each one of them. What happens if I shine all three lights in the same place? Now I've got the blue light in the middle, so I move the red light over to the blue, and the green light over to the blue. Now I've got a blue light, a green light, and a red light shining on the same place. What do I have on the board? I don't have clarity with any one of those colors. What I have is a mix of those frequencies that we would call, that would be the equivalent of confusion. Well, the mind works in exactly the same way. If I have thought disorders that are resonated in a certain situation or circumstance, and my mind is aiming for truth, then I've got conflicting energies, and where they collide, where they mix, there's going to be confusion. As I apply forgiveness and remove the conflicting energies, the thought disorders, then I will come to clarity in my mind, because there's nothing in me to conflict with the preconceived ideas that I have. I make an assumption, and you have spoken to us about this before, that, you know, that perhaps you're receiving a double message that he's interested in rekindling this relationship even while he's married to someone else. I take it that's the place where your confusion surfaces. So it'd be a chance for you to clean up your confusion and a chance to communicate really clearly that you're going to be in absolute integrity, and that's just the way it is. And so it sounds like he's giving you the opportunity to do some work on getting clear in your mind as to who you are, and maybe clearing out some old confusion that's been there from other times in relationships. And if that's so, we certainly hold the space for it. I hope that makes sense and fits. I think I can hear you, Jeannie, but you're not coming through the sound system, through the show.
Okay. I was muted.
Ah, so, mute button. That's it.
Jamuna asks, she says, I would love to hear more about how others perceive us. So if one holds themselves as love, it can change how others perceive us?
Absolutely. You know, perception, again, recognizing perception is nothing but a product of the mind and a reflection of the content of carbon-based memory. So whatever the object of attention is that we look at, you know, six different people were at an accident. They all went to court. And when you listen to them testify, you wonder if any two of them were at the same accident. Their descriptions were so different. Why is that? Because, in fact, when six people are all witnesses to an accident, no two of them saw the same accident. If we're living in perception, my mind, whatever that accident council of thought triggers in me, is my perception. Someone who has different content is going to have a different perception of that event. Their mind's going to show them something different. And so taking responsibility and recognizing, especially if there's some form of hostility or fear in what's triggered in me in my own internal dynamics, gives me the opportunity to own the conflicts in my own internal dynamics and clear them out, forgive them, literally removing them, so that I come back to not only a perceptual system that is fueled by love, but an ability to be aware beyond, eventually this is what develops, beyond one's own mind to be aware of the energetic patterns in the actuality. And those things don't filter through perception or through carbon-based memory. Those are things that we can grasp directly. And ultimately, the objective of this work is that you can grasp directly the actual energetic patterns in the world rather than just recognizing what those patterns resonate in you. So that's kind of one of the objectives of the work, is to clear that all out, getting rid of the past and living truly in the present. Any other thoughts or responses there, sweetie?
Not on that one, but on the other one, Sandy says, what kind of goal can she ask for in her worksheet on her confusion goal, that she wants to be in clarity? What might her goal be?
Well, so I could see you doing worksheets in several different arenas in that regard, Sandy. One of them might be goals that you hold for this person who was your former. And it might be a goal for him to be honest and be in integrity. It might be a goal for him to be true in his relationship. It might be a goal for him to treat you honorably rather than perhaps trying to seduce you for his own purposes. So they'd be some of the goals that you might work with in a worksheet around him. And then some of the goals, you know, if you did a worksheet on yourself, some of the goals in that regard might be for you to really, truly be in 100% integrity with yourself, knowing that you honor his relationship with his wife and you hold that sacred. And that if there's any inclination or any part of you that would like to interfere with that, then to look at what the motivation would be behind that and look at the goals that would drive that and cancel those goals so that you clean up and clean out those parts of your mind. So they would be some of the options for worksheets that I would see. And it might be an opportunity, you know, if you look back into your childhood or early family history, you know, if there was ever any, if there were ever any relationship issues where there was infidelity within the family, there might be some work to do around infidelity, you know, cancel the thought, but maybe if mom and dad, if there was something going on there that was out of line with really being in integrity in their relationship as a child, there might be some leftover energetic patterns to be cleared out from having observed that and the challenges that offered to a child. So it would be some of the options, some of the things that I would, you know, if I were doing those worksheets, that would be the direction I'd be going. You could also look at, you know, is there any part of you that would like him to be back in your life? And if so, then, you know, with that conflict around integrity, it might look like canceling the goals for attention from him or approval from him, or, you know, if there are some old wounds from, you know, whatever the reasoning was that you broke up with him or he broke up with you, however that went, there might be, this might be the opportunity to get some clarity and clean up those parts of your mind around that relationship. So, you know, pretty much any situation that brings things up can be, there can be a wide variety of worksheets to be done that help to clean up this carbon-based memory system. So I hope that makes sense and helps.
She said thank you.
And the thought
very much.
Yeah. Honored and delighted.
Not on that one, but back. Yeah, we've got 3 minutes. Back to the one of how people perceive you, you know, whereas, say, you may have to, let's say that you hold fear and someone else holds anger, and you can take care of forgiving, you know, what brings up the fear in you, and then the others may still act the same way, say that they still act angry, but they're needing feedback to show them what they need to work on, and if they don't get that feedback from you, they will change or they'll go do it to somebody else so that they can get that feedback from them. So, yes, it can change your world. It's like we used to play a game as a child called tug-of-war or tug-of-rope, and you'd be holding one end and the other person holding the other end, and you're pulling back and forth. And if you drop your end of the rope, then it changes their game whether they want it to or not.
Absolutely. So we'll breathe with you. We've just got a minute or so left, so let's just take a moment to take a couple of deep breaths together, tap into that active presence of love that is our true human life. And as you tap into that presence of love that you are, allow yourself to breathe that love into and through every cell in your structure and out into the world. The melody line from the song, "The World Needs Now Is Love." And to recognize that each and every one of us is qualified to offer that energy. And we're qualified not because of any sort of logic or reason. The only reason is because that's what we are. And when, and sadly, we don't live in a culture that has encouraged us to practice, to a large degree at least, bringing that presence of love into the world, especially where there's conflict. You know, how many parents teach their children how to fight? Oh, you got to protect yourself. And of course, the best way to attract attack is to have a great defense ready to go. And that energy of defense literally is an actual energy that is a measurable energy wave that radiates from us and will draw someone who wants to play the game of attack and defense. When we drop out of that game, then human life becomes a whole different process. And we're here to support you living in that process and cleaning up any part of you that would take you out of the truth of who you are. So thank you for joining us. Create the best area of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.